Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better! I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. I messed that up. Ballisticradio.com. And get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, and pictures I've turned into paintings with the Prisma app. At facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, again, an empty chair, because we're time traveling and Jack's not here. Anyway, it's time for part two of our show with John Hearn. And this episode, we're going to be talking about automaticity and task complexity, maybe a little bit more, and all these other things. But before that, guess what? This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors, or at least it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night, and TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 night vision goggle to the IR Patrol thermal monocular and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that hunts Pokemon at night. TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC now with financing. Own, or if you don't have all the cash right now, finance the night. So, and if I were better at my job, I'd read like all the terms and conditions in a high squeaky voice super quick right after that, but you can go to TNVC's website and do that. Anyway, John Hearn, how's it going, John?
I'm doing great.
For those that missed last week's episode, just real quick, who are you, what do you do, and we'll hop right into this week's.
Okay, law enforcement officer since 1992, range master staff instructor since 2001, speaker researcher since 2005. How about that?
Perfect. And do you want to talk about losing to me at the TAC conference this last year again, or did we cover that last show enough?
When your victories are so small in number, John, you have to claim as many as you can. So
I know.
Talk all you want.
Okay, thank you. Well, I mean, your hair is much nicer than mine. So, I mean, you've got that going for you. And in general...
But you got the tactical beard, dude, you know?
You know what that is? I'm always scared that I'm going to get trapped in the wilderness and not have any food. And see, this way, I've always got a little bit I've carried with me from the last meal. So, God, that's horrible.
You have to keep mine trimmed and neat and respectable for the uniform, what can I say?
You know. So anyway, God, that was terrible. Horrible segue. So last episode we were talking about who wins, who loses, and why. And one of the things that we were talking about was automaticity. And I'd like to discuss that in a little further detail, because one of the arguments that I get into a lot with people, especially when I start talking about competition shooting or, trainers that do not place as much of an emphasis on the marksmanship side of things, as perhaps I do, is why, and I call it unconscious competence, but automaticity is probably the correct term for it, but why that's important and why it frees up our mind to focus on the things that actually matter, like whether or not we should be shooting in the first place, or maybe other things attached to the situation we find ourselves in. So can you elaborate a little bit more about what automaticity is, how we get it, and why you think it's important?
All right. Automaticity is, again, a term that comes from the psychological research. I did not invent it or coin it. It's synonymous with two other terms you may hear me use, which is overlearned, which, again, is not a bad thing. It's not like overeating, but that's how one achieves automaticity, is through overlearning. Or there's sometimes researchers in a similar field will use the term fluency to describe the same effectively the same phenomenon.
Okay.
In a nutshell, automaticity is typically defined as one step from stimuli to response.
Okay.
The classic example of that would be is when the gun magically appears in your hand. Most of us that have carried a gun for a number of times will confront something, and just like magic, literally, the gun's in my hand. You're sitting here going,
how'd that happen?
Where did that come from?
Yeah.
And that's a sign that you probably possess automaticity in that one particular area, because your brain just goes, yeah, we need that gun. And while you're sitting up there doing all that fancy talking stuff, we're going to go in and get this out here where we might be able to use it. So that would be the classic, I guess, example, you know, shooting example of automaticity. Another example, to go back to the day where people that used to be able to send Morse code by telegraph,
yeah,
they could literally sit there and have a conversation with you while they're sending their Morse code, because that Morse code was so deeply embedded in the brain that they could free their conscious mind to carry on a conversation.
Okay. And the thing that, you know, going back to the gun was there like magic, I've actually and fortunately it turned out okay, but having drawn a firearm for reals in front of other people and then talking to them about it afterwards, it was the comment from both of the people involved was, wow, that was like a really good magic trick. And I'm like, yeah, me too. Surprise me. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think the another really good example of that is in Jim Cirillo's, his writings. He talks about in his first gunfight, literally trying to figure out who was shooting his gun, because his gun was in front of him. He could see the sights. It was going off and bad guys were going down, but he's trying to figure out who's doing this, because you know, the mind has a pretty strong survival instinct.
Yeah.
And if it has a high level of skill, like he obviously did being a national PPC guy, you know, while you're sitting, sometimes while you're doing that higher order thinking, it's just going to take care of business,
right,
which, as long as it's the right decision, is a good thing.
Well, and I guess that kind of actually segues nicely into the right decision and where automaticity helps us, or overlearning a skill. So if we've learned something to the point where it does not require any conscious effort for us to utilize that skill or that tool or whatever it is, does that let us think about why we're doing something a little bit more in depth?
Absolutely. And also, realistically, it gives you more options. You know, you may be able to delay going to guns just a little bit longer to try to de-escalate a situation. So I cannot think of any situations in which having a high level of skill would really be detrimental.
Okay. Well, that seems to be, you know, there's a lot of conversation about, well, and it seems like specifically where it comes in is when, like, tactical side people start arguing with competition side people, and there's a lot of back and forth and things like that. And that seems to be the one, well, you can shoot too fast. Can you shoot too fast, or can you make the decision to shoot too fast?
I think that, you know, once you've made a sound decision to shoot, you can't really shoot too fast, but you can make that decision to shoot way too fast.
Okay.
Or with insufficient information. So.
That makes sense. So I guess we're talking about automaticity and overlearning things. What are some, when do people think they've done that versus when they've actually done that? Is there any way to be able to tell when someone has reached the level of, I guess, automaticity, or just that, you know, that level of skill?
Well, there are direct ways and indirect ways.
Okay.
Now, the direct way would be to have them perform the task while they were in a high resolution brain scanner, because people who are experts in an area, which is what I would associate with automaticity, actually deliver their performance from a different part of their brain than people who are not experts.
Huh.
So you could, in theory, do that. I don't think you can really, you know, I don't know of many brain scanners that allow live fire. So what we probably have to do to look as a surrogate for that would be to look at their actual performance when they shoot. Are they accurate? How fast can they deliver those hits? So you're looking, that's more of an indirect approach to measuring. But to answer, I guess, your question, and not in a smarmy way, yes, you could directly measure that. We just don't have the money.
Well, that makes sense. And that, we got about 2 minutes left in this segment. But so let me ask you this. I've gotten to an argument, and you could probably guess with who, but we don't need to bring him up on the show, several times with someone that says the performance on pre-choreographed range drills is no indication of performance in an actual shooting. And while I, in theory, agree with him, it seems like it might be in, you know, high performance might be indicative of at least an increased level of performance in the real world for reels?
I think it's like a question of exclusion. Just because you can shoot really fast and accurate doesn't mean you're necessarily going to do well. But if you can't shoot fast or accurate, I know for sure you're not going to do well. So one is not a guarantee, but the other is probably a pretty good sign that you're not going to do very well. Again, unless going back to the original show, maybe your task complexity is so low that your level of mediocrity is sufficient.
Maybe your task complexity is so low that your level of mediocrity is sufficient. That's an amazing place to go to break on. And I want to talk to you about that when we get back. Right now we're talking with John Hearn in the amazing part two of our of last week's episode. And right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Sig Sauer, now with more options. We're not all the same, and our carry gun shouldn't have to be either. Sig Sauer gives you choices, and with more models than the Bible's got Psalms, it's never been easier to find a Sig Sauer that fits your needs. From the extremely versatile striker-fired P320 with modular grip frame, to the Legion Series P226, the single-stack P225A1, or the entry-level SP2022. Sig Sauer makes a model that's right for you! Just don't ask for Callahan full-bore auto-lock. They don't make that yet. Sig Sauer, when it counts. And see, the Callahan full-bore auto-lock is a Serenity or Firefly reference for those of you who are not nerds living in your mom's basement. I mean, having lived in my mom's basement, I get a chuckle out of that one. But thought I'd explain it for the people that have real lives. And Jack's not here to laugh at this joke, so it just fell flat. Anyway, we're talking with John Hearn. And before the break, John, you were saying that, maybe the task complexity is sufficient enough or low enough that your level of mediocrity won't come into play to determine your success or failure in that situation. What do you think, or why do you think, or do you think, people seem to focus on just sucking less than the other guy as a way to win?
That's an interesting question, and I'd probably think it has several parts. Number one, again, not sucking less involves that horrible four-letter word of WORK.
Right.
And most people, and the way you get good at this stuff is not necessarily sexy or exciting. When I say that you could be a rock star if you'll just give me 15 minutes every day and drive practice for the next year and maybe live fire once a month to verify that, that's not sexy and that's not exciting.
No.
The other part of that, I think, to answer that question is that some people just have no appreciation for what can be done with a pistol. They think that their 2.5 second draw stroke is the fact that it may in fact be the fastest that they've ever seen because their friends suck even more than they do.
Right.
So I think that some of the value of competition is it really does give you an imperfect but an objective measure of how your skill level stacks up next to other people.
Well, and it certainly it can certainly be a humbling experience, especially. I remember, and I just posted a video of this on the Facebook page the other day, though it will be 2 weeks in the past by the time everyone hears this. But I was out training with Bob Vogel a couple of years ago, and he had not fired a round all day. And he was running me through the El Prez, and I'm like, hey, will you run one while I run my camera? And he's like, well, sure, dude, I haven't shot today, but whatever. I'm like, well, I'd like to get it on tape. And he runs a 4.49 all A zone El Presidente drill at 10 yards cold, and that's incredible, to me or to anyone that knows what that is and why that's difficult.
It almost explains why he might be a world champion.
Yeah, almost. Another dude that dry fires a lot and practices a lot. But so what are some, other than the brain scanner, and we don't have money to figure this one out via high-resolution brain scans, what are some things that people can do, or what are some standards that people can shoot that may or may not tell them where they're at in this?
Let's just backtrack for a second. If we
sure.
go back to those terms, automaticity, fluency is the other one, overlearned, there's actually definitions in the literature for what those are.
Okay.
And those tend to be increased. They are actually, fluency is generally measured by speed to carry something out.
Okay.
So people with higher levels of fluencies do it faster. The hallmark, okay, of overlearning is precision. So all of a sudden we have speed and precision, which sounds a lot like shooting, and maybe something we can start to move toward quantification.
Okay. So what let's take a second to talk about Todd Green, who unfortunately passed away earlier this year. He and another gentleman came up with one of my favorite diagnostic drills. It's a diagnostic drill. It's not a scenario drill. It's not a scenario. It's not a tactical drill. But the FAST test, which is draw from concealment at 7 yards, fire 2 rounds to a 3.5 by 5 index card in a head box, at which point the gun will run empty. You'll perform a slide lock reload and fire 4 more rounds into an 8-inch circle at 7 yards. And there's standards to that. And you've got this amazing little chart here that has a bunch of other standards on it as well, and I will post this in the show notes for this episode. But can we talk about that particular test and what is to be learned from it, or maybe inferred from it, and performance on it?
Well, you know, I don't know if necessarily one test is perfect, but it always is going to be revealing, because especially I don't care so much about. Well, I guess your overall fast time might be telling, but I like to break it down. So,
yeah.
You know, what is that first shot to a precision target? What is your split? What is your reload? You know, what are your splits afterwards? And ultimately, they make up the total score. But, for instance, you might have, you know, be able to draw and hit the thing in 2 seconds, but your reload is 4 seconds. Well,
right.
You're not going to have a very good fast time.
Right.
So I think that's a neat little – I love the fast because it's a it requires so few rounds to fire.
Right.
You can literally use it as a benchmark for everyone. So I think that the standards were, you know, anything under 7 was an intermediate, if I'm remembering right, and then anything under 5 was advanced.
I think anything under 10 was intermediate, 7 was expert, and under 5 was advanced, or maybe the...
Yeah, under 5 you're a god, but let's just face it.
Yeah.
But,
I don't know. I've shot it under 5 a little bit, so... We're not. I don't want to assign deity status to me specifically, but other people that run it under 5 are impressive, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm trying to avoid a Ghostbusters reference here. Of Ray, the next time somebody asks you if you're a god,
you say
tell
yes.
Them yes.
Yeah. Well, no, you can go ahead. It's okay. You can make the Ghostbusters.
I think I just did it.
Did you? Wow, I missed it.
I did.
Went right over my head. Anyway, continue. Please.
So, you know, that is a fairly quick snapshot because it involves a number of skills which may be important. So it gives you a fairly good snapshot. Now, I would say that I might want maybe a test of pure accuracy in there. You know, so what I've been running myself personally for 2 tests is the single stack version of the test, which is draw and fire 8 rounds to a bullseye in 10 seconds. For score,
mm-hmm.
I think that's the best check of practical marksmanship because at 10 yards, you really have to have some solid trigger control to keep them in the black.
Right.
And then the other test I've been running, which is, you know, very fast-ish, is Tom's latest version of the 3M drill, which is now is a 10-round drill with a headshot, the latest version.
Okay.
And again, if you run those 2 tests, I can tell a lot about your shooting. You know, the test is going to tell me about your basic fundamentals of marksmanship.
Right.
And, you know, the 3M drill or the fast drill, those are both manipulation drills.
Right.
And, you know, can you produce a reasonable score in those topics? And, of course, you're dealing with Tom Gibbons, so the 3M is now either shot clean or you fail, which is a slightly different performance aspect to the fast test where they're just simply penalties.
Well, and we could talk about Tom's casino drill, which I came very close to having the record time on other than that drop shot.
And I have to say this, Tom Gibbons is in fact an evil genius because of all my playing around with this. I think that especially the more advanced variations of the casino drill are probably the most handy references for automaticity that there are out there.
Yeah. I was in, oh, where was that? Fort Lauderdale last year and running the surprise reload variant of the casino drill. And, I shot it in something like, and people have shot it quicker since then, but I think it was like 12.1 or something like that, and dropped the last shot on the last box. And he's standing right behind me, and he saw my head go down, and he's like, yep, should have slowed down and made sure you hit that. And I'm like, thank you, Tom, very much. So anyway, we've got to go to break. When we get back, I will stop talking about my own personal performance on drills. I swear to God, maybe. And we will hear what John has to say. We're talking with John Hurd right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with John Hurd about automaticity and fluency and other stuff. And during the break, John, I looked up. We were talking about the fast test at the beginning of the last segment. Anything over 10 seconds is a novice score. Less than 10 seconds is intermediate. Less than 7 seconds is advanced, and less than 5 seconds is expert. So, and something that I think is important to bring up when you're looking at tests and think someone got a tweet. Looking at tests and things like this is that while the fast test is a really good overall performance benchmark or things like that, it does place a lot of emphasis on something that maybe is not important in an actual shooting, which would be an emergency reload. So how important do you think it is when you're looking at like diagnostic drills or tests or things of that nature to understand the likelihood of having to perform that specific skill?
I think that's useful, but, you know, there's no perfect drill, and it drives me crazy when people want to nitpick these things.
Right.
You know, none of these drills are perfect. So shoot them, track your performance for the love of God, mm-hmm. and see where you're, you know, where you need to improve. Now, is an emergency reload in the real world, is that a, you know, a fairly insignificant, you know, rare event? Yeah, it actually is, especially, you know, for more of the private citizen gun carry.
Right.
But, dude, I got news for you.
It
if
happens.
If you've run out of BBs and you still have bad guys that need to be shot, that is an honest-to-God emergency.
Yes.
And you may live or die based on your ability to quickly get a fresh magazine in the pistol and get the slide forged. So, again, do I want to have to do that? Absolutely not. But, you know, you're betting your life at these over these things.
Well, and since we have to reload the gun during our practice or classes or drills anyway, it pays to be able to reload the gun quickly. It saves time, and that's always a good thing. I was going to ask you a question, and then I forgot what the question was going to be. So, here, I have a question, that is not the question I wanted to ask, but when you're talking about implicit memory, which is something that you sort of brought up last episode, and we haven't really gotten into, this episode, but what is implicit memory, number one? And number two, what is the only enemy that implicit memory has, which is the question you begged me to feed you?
Excellent. All right. Well, you've got two memory systems, you know, two roughly speaking long-term memory systems, explicit memory and implicit memory. Explicit memory is more like state capitals and stuff like that that you try to push into your mind.
Right.
Implicit memory, and especially particularly procedural memory, is stuff that you learn by doing.
Okay.
Right? And again, stuff that's stored as an implicit memory is actually a different part of your brain. That's why we can actually see where it's coming from in our eye, like in a high-resolution brain scan.
Okay.
But one of the interesting foibles, we talked on the last show, this concept about the holistic approach to gunfighting. And we talked about something as, you know, simple as getting enough sleep can make a difference. Well, one of the few things that really can affect implicit memory and your ability to access its contents is actually fatigue.
Okay.
So, you know, it's one of those things that people don't stop to think about, you know, long-term performance-wise and stuff like that. You know, something as simple as making sure you're getting a reasonable amount of sleep, you know, may or may not make a difference. You know, if on that example there, if you're kind of on the seesaw and you're kind of teetering there and you're not sure which way it's going to go, you know, how well rested you are and the state that you're in as a result of that could feed into that because, again, because of that little Venn diagram tie-over, that level of emotional control is going to affect your ability to access that skill. So it's all tied together.
Well, and You know, from my own personal experience, I was recently at a shoot house instructor class that I got 2 hours of sleep for the night of day one, and ended up at the end of the instructor class was like 2 points short from getting a certification. I mean, I got an attendance certificate, which I guess is cool if you're into that sort of thing, but ended up, in my estimate, failing the class simply because my performance was not high enough to pass the class. And that was, I mean, a lot of it was tied into just, you know, my own, I don't want to only blame one thing, but the fact that I was not well rested enough when I started the class certainly hurt. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, that's science biting you in the butt.
Ah, darn science. It's like magnets. I don't know how those work either. I just made a terrible reference there, but some people will be amused. Maybe they won't. I don't know. So yeah, anyway, going back to this and the topic at hand. So if people want to work up to this, or, you know, think that overlearning a skill is important, what do they need to do? I mean, how is there any, like, this is X number of times equals okay, you got it, or is it just dependent on the person?
Well, I'm going to answer the question slightly differently. I'm going to tell you how you don't do it.
Okay.
Okay? The way you don't do it is go buy a gun, buy a bunch of bullets, go take one class, you know, shoot that class, and then don't touch the gun again for 3 years, and then maybe take another class, because you're going to suck no matter what you do. That's not how your brain works.
Okay.
And there is some individual variation in that. But the way you develop automaticity is repetition, okay? That stuff gets into that procedural memory from either repetition or from a strong emotional reaction. So unless you're in a Craig Douglas class, you're not going to get a whole lot of strong emotion in your training. You're going to get some maybe if you win or lose a man-on-man or something like that. So really the only access point we have is the repetition. So we're talking about those core skills, getting the gun out of the holster quickly, okay? Being able to manipulate the trigger without disturbing the sights. You have to do that a lot in order to get it transferred over to the implicit memory system.
Okay.
So there's some keys there. Getting solid instruction. I guess another way to do this, to not do this, would be to go buy a gun, shoot some at the range because you want to be good for class, then go to the class. Nope. Horribly wrong. Because all you will have done is ingrained a bunch of horrible bad habits, and your mind has a very strong bias toward the first way you learn something.
Right.
So if you were out there on the range shooting with a suboptimal grip, you'll struggle with that suboptimal grip for pretty much the rest of your shooting career. So, you know, whether it's shooting or anything else, it really does pay off huge dividends to go get professional instruction from the get-go, and then take that professional instruction and use what you learn there kind of as a roadmap to figure out what you need to practice. And practice it on a, I don't know if I'd call, necessarily call it daily basis, but you basically have to kind of have a huge buy-in at the first. So, for instance, if you were to go take a good solid shooting class with a pistol and then practice that stuff very regularly,
right.
Dry practice 3 times a week for the next year, live fire every other week, dude, you'd be in really good shape at the end of the year, and you'd be getting toward the amount of repetitions you needed to do what you needed to do. But it is those repetitions over time, which is ROT, which is a horrible acronym for this, but it really is what buys you skill. You talk to Bulky and some of the guys that he knows. We're talking about guys that drive practice on an almost daily basis and maybe put 40 rounds downrange every week, no matter what, to make sure that they've got the they're not paying the recency tax on their skills.
Right. You know, and going back to that, so I go through like phases of when I'm able to shoot and when I'm not able to shoot, but there's very rarely a day where I don't at least work on drawing the firearm dry, you know, do 20, 30 presentations from concealment real quick, work on trigger press and all that good stuff, whether or not I'm able to go to the range. You know, just so that, and I got this from you, just so that the skills are recent, you know?
And that's one of the things that people want to forget is that recency is an actual psychological phenomenon. Some skills are more susceptible to the recency effect. That is, the last time you did it is going to determine how well you do it this time. And what is really susceptible to recency effect is anything that involves fine motor skills. A lot of people will tell you that you can't do fine motor skills under stress, and that's not accurate. You can't do fine motor skills under stress unless you've practiced them a lot and there's some recency associated with them. You know, you talked about in your dry practice, you know, drawing the gun and working trigger presses. If I, you know, my take on this thing now, if I can't do anything else in a given day, I'll obviously clear the weapon, put a piece of empty brass on the sight, and make sure I can press the trigger straight back without disturbing it.
Right.
And if I do nothing that day but make sure I've worked on that fine motor skill, I'll call that day a success. Now, if I have more time, obviously I work on draw stroke and reloading and stuff like that. But people tend to really not appreciate how much recency can bite them in the butt, especially with, again, the fine motor skills.
Right. We got to go to break. We're talking with John Hearn. We'll finish up the two-part episode with him when we get back. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen sidekick to the 500 lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, "Aziz, light!" ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at a potential threat or you're just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now is a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners. You can get 30% off at the Surefire.com web store off of all their products except batteries and suppressors by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS. That is ALLTHELUMENS at the Surefire.com web store. Hey, don't put a space after that discount code because then it doesn't work. Anyway, we're talking with John Hearn. Before the break, we were talking about recency and, you know, how that can affect us and all those things. Let me ask you this. For skills that are important for the private citizen, what do you think is the number one thing that people should focus their attention on? I know that, you know, before the break you were saying if you only do one thing, you work on your trigger press. I was talking about my presentation being the thing that I tend to, if I only practice one thing, to practice. What do you think the answer is, or is there an answer?
I would say that for most people, armed citizens and law enforcement, you know, civilian stateside law enforcement, your primary skills are going to be some type of a failure drill from the holster, some type of a failure drill from the ready, and some form of a reload. I like all three of those because they're complex exercises in that if I can do a failure drill from the holster, it includes in there a high-level precision shot. Similarly, from the ready, you know, I've got skills I can break down. And I guess as far as the reload, I think I would prefer an emergency just because if you can perform an emergency reload, you can certainly perform a speed reload.
Right.
And let's face facts. Again, if we're talking about shooting skills, not de-escalation, not legal stuff like that, if you can do those three things at a reasonable level on demand with your pistol, you're probably going to be okay. I mean, if you're not okay with that certain set of skills, you're certainly entering into the area of outliers as far as events go.
Well, and that seems to be, I mean, that seems to be something that people sort of fast forward past or don't like to think about. And I know we sort of touched on it. I can't remember if it was this episode or last one, but it's not so much the odds as it is the stakes. But do you think that we should train for those outliers at least a little bit or...
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you need to have the highest level of skill that you can have given the resources that you have available. Resources include time and ammo and stuff like that. You know, we have a newborn. My time has taken a pretty big hit.
Yep.
But I think that you're never going to suffer from having a higher level of skill. Does that answer the question? I almost lost track there.
Yeah, I think it did. Trust me, for people do not appreciate how difficult it is sometimes for me to do the show because I'm just like, squirrel, Great thing. What were we talking about? You know what I mean? But as far as, you know, what would be some skills that an outlier event would require that maybe people don't work on quite enough?
I would say that the one that immediately comes to mind is distance work with the pistol.
Okay.
The guys that are historical, seriously gunmen, you know, were, you know, capable of hitting a man at 100 yards.
Yeah.
Now, is that a fairly outlying skill? Yeah, it is. But if you're the guy that needs to make that shot, or let's say that suddenly you practice at 100, it's going to make that 50-yard shot a lot easier.
Right.
So I guess some of the bigger outliers would be long-distance precision shooting, engagement around Claude Werner makes a pretty good argument that you need to get your head around having to shoot around friendlies. Maybe not classic hostage shots, but maybe having friends and family members close by to the threat. So that would be another thing that you probably need to spend a little bit of time with. The other outliers, I mean, just your basic pistol malfunctions. And then at that point, you start looking at, doing this stuff one-handed as far as greater outliers, you know.
Right.
I'm not sure anybody has ever successfully cleared double feed with just their support hand in a gunfight. Maybe outside of that deputy down in Florida, but it's, you don't need to practice that skill every day, but maybe once or twice a year, make sure you can still do that.
Well, and that actually brings, and then we could have and of course it's while we're running out of time. We could have an interesting conversation, I think, at some point about what are things that people consider to be outliers, but maybe aren't. Cause I know one of the things that you mentioned in there was, clearing pistol malfunctions or things like that. But I've been having a lot of conversations with like Claude Werner and also Chuck Haggard about how much more commonplace pistol malfunctions are in civilian self-defense and law enforcement, stateside law enforcement shootings than people think. You know what I mean?
That's the God's honest truth. I mean, if you look at the FBI has some of their block of research that I've talked about and stuff like that, they found the FBI, when they looked at law enforcement gunfightings, more stoppages than normal,
Yeah.
The NTI guys always found that pistols malfunctioned more in their highly realistic scenarios than they do in the real world.
Yep.
And it generally comes down to getting a poor grip on the gun.
Yeah,
you look at some of these, these law enforcement draw-proof holsters. I mean, there are literally some holsters out there that require that you rock backwards on the gun, which does nothing but remove the pistol from the tang of the pistol from the web of your hand.
Right.
Which is a great way to get a malfunction. And we can speculate about some more specific causes about that, but guns puke in the real world a lot more than they do on the range.
Well, and it seems like that, as a layman on the outside looking into that, it seems like that when we see a bunch, a much higher rate of user-induced malfunctions when it's for all the marbles, what we're looking at is people that are consciously competent on a square range, but suddenly when presented with an information overload or a complex task, that's not good enough to run the pistol sufficiently when they're not focusing on just running the pistol.
And absolutely. I have a friend of mine that does a lot of training for law enforcement. He runs shoot houses.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, he says, when you get into, because if you're making shots in shoot houses, none of those are perfect, square range shots. You're twisted, you're torqued around, you're trying to keep as much of yourself behind cover. The guns puke like you would not believe when you actually are in those contorted positions. And it's not necessarily that it may not even be a skill level. It's just that's the way the real world works.
Yeah. It's one of those things that it seems like people don't want to talk about, and they certainly don't want to talk about, wait, you mean if I don't practice enough, my gun won't work when I need it to? Because that doesn't seem like a thing, but that's kind of what we're seeing a little bit.
Well, there's a lot of stuff on the table that we don't like to discuss because it's not squishy and warm and huggy and stuff like that, but that stuff does exist out there.
So we're coming up on the end of our two-part episode with John Hearn. We got a couple minutes left. John, if people want to come train with you or find you or sit in on one of your lectures or, I don't know, buy you a beer, how can they do that?
The best way to contact me is through Tom Givens, his rangemaster. That's rangemaster.com. There's a link under the instructor bios to contact me there. I generally pretty much teach exclusively for Tom these days. I do some conferences around the country. the Northeast Shooter Summit, some of the SWAT events, obviously the Rangemaster Tactical Conference.
Yep.
So I guess, you know, go train. You might see my name pop up somewhere. I know, as far as I know, I'm going to be at Northeast Shooters for sure in 2017 with a bunch of the usual suspects.
Perfect. You're going to be at the 2017 TAC Conference too, I assume?
I will.
Perfect. And for those of you that are interested in attending that, if you just do a Google search for Rangemaster Tactical Conference, you'll be able to find all the information you need and all that. Hey, John, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me. I know that you probably had better things to do, especially with a newborn running around. So thank you very much, sir.
You are most welcome.
All right. So, guys, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star reviews on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.